I'm Rich Egger, and this is In the Tri-States, a review of the news of the past month. The plan to merge the Bushnell Prairie City, Abingdon, and Avon school districts did not receive a passing grade during the March 20th elections in Illinois. Just Vote No committee member John Slater says the new district would have been too large, forcing students to spend too much time on the bus.
That was my number one thing. The 2 years ago, I said the safety of our kids was a concern. If Abingdon was 7 or 10 miles from Bushnell, this would not have been an issue. We probably wouldn't be talking right now. It probably would have been a consolidation.
The referendum needed to be approved by voters in all three districts, but it was rejected by more than 80% in BPC and more than 74% in Abingdon. Only Avon voters supported the plan. Even though that consolidation failed at the ballot box, those districts might still be looking at a future that includes consolidation. Public Radio's Jim Lenz filed this report on March 30th.
Members of the Just Vote No committee in Bushnell said they opposed that specific consolidation, but they're open to the idea of merging with Avon. Voters have not been presented that option. BPC Superintendent David Messersmith says Avon would have to initiate the process. He says a two-district consolidation is a possibility.
We certainly have our doors open, and I've been in contact with Superintendent Oakley from Avon, and I'm sure our board would communicate with their board to explore some sharing opportunities or anything that might come down.
Abingdon Superintendent David Black says his district is also open to consolidation with Avon.
We are very interested in working with them, and we are, right now we're looking at data. They're looking at data. We're trying to see if, not only if a fit will work, but what configuration will work best.
Messersmith and Black say their districts don't need to make quick decisions. Both maintain their districts are financially sound and offer a solid core curriculum for their students. Avon's future is far less sure. Superintendent Dan Oakley says the district is at a crossroads.
Unless something changes drastically in the next couple of years in at least two areas, and that would be attendance and finances, we're going to have to go with another district.
Oakley says the 2010 study for the three-district consolidation also looked at scenarios for two-district consolidations. He has updated the study numbers with the latest data. The board is scrutinizing those scenarios to see which would benefit the district the most. Oakley says the district will have to move quickly if it wants to put another option before voters this year. May 7th is the deadline to place referenda on the November ballot. He says further budget cuts for Avon are not an option.
We have done staff cuts to the point we're down about as thin as we can go without affecting education directly. And by that I mean without going in and starting to cut things like art and music and things like that. And that is what we want to be able to completely avoid doing.
The debate over consolidation focused attention on the quality of education in the three districts. Members of the Just Vote No committee in Bushnell said they will now become more involved with their schools. Superintendent David Messersmith hopes that's true. He recalls a recent meeting of Project Success for the elementary school. Just one parent showed up.
They're telling us that they're energized and they're motivated and they're going to start coming and being a part of this. And I just hope that they're sincere about it and they follow through. We love to partner with our parents.
Messersmith says some of the parents have pledged to raise money from local businesses to pay for the new technology that could broaden the district's curriculum. He estimates one-on-one technology will take 2 years to install in the junior high school and 3 years at the high school. Abingdon Superintendent David Black agrees with Messersmith's assessment that technological changes are on the way, but Black points out that adding technology is not as simple as buying a box of computers.
See, I came in as a big proponent of distance learning, and I found that there are a lot of schools that are on block systems. If the schedules don't match up, it's very difficult to schedule classes.
Despite Avon's precarious situation, Superintendent Dan Oakley says the district has embraced technology. It has partnered with other districts and the Illinois Virtual High School for classes. He expects to build on the curriculum recommendations of the Committee of 10, which supported the three-district merger.
We could still take, for example, the curriculum work that was done and scale that backwards somewhat and still have a better curriculum than either of the two of us on our own have.
Oakley says it's too early to tell whether Abingdon, BPC, or another district would be the best choice for a partner. Abingdon Superintendent David Black says rural districts need to provide a solid core curriculum and a number of electives. He adds smaller enrollments mean rural districts never will be able to compete with the curricula offered by big metropolitan districts. I'm Jim Lenz.
Of course, there were many other referenda and races on the March ballot. Bushnell voters solidly supported a referendum to increase the city's sales tax by half a cent. A similar proposal failed last year. Mayor Steve Russell credits several business and civic groups with helping promote the measure this time around.
They got the information out as far as what it would cost and what it would do. And, you know, that was the criticism last time, was that nobody had information on what was going to go on with that.
The money will be spent on infrastructure repairs. More than 65% of Bushnell's voters cast ballots in favor of the referendum. Fulton County also hoped to increase the sales tax by half a cent, but voters did not buy that plan. More than 67% cast ballots against it. The money would have been used for public safety needs. The Emmett-Chalmers Fire Protection District received voter permission to issue $195,000 in bonds. The money will pay for equipment and facility needs. Voters in Ipava and Table Grove agreed to plans to allow their villages to go on the open market to buy electricity for homes and small businesses. The idea is to secure cheaper prices. The ballot proposals were made possible by a 2010 state law. Sherry Bustos won the Democratic nomination for Congress in the 17th District. She'll square off against incumbent Republican Bobby Schilling in the fall election. In the neighboring 18th District, Steve Waterworth won the Democratic nomination. He'll challenge incumbent Republican Aaron Schock in the fall. The three-way contest in the Republican primary for Hancock County Sheriff proved to be not much of a contest at all. Scott Bensinger received 66% of the vote to turn aside two challengers. Bensinger hopes to spend more time in the community, especially in the schools.
I think it's important to establish a good positive law enforcement student relationship, and that helps hopefully helps prevent any problems in the future.
Bensinger was appointed sheriff last year after John Jefferson retired. He's seeking to fill the remaining 2 years of Jefferson's term. Schuyler County State's Attorney Tina Griffin turned back a challenge in the Republican primary. She knocked off Jesse Gilsdorf 66% to 34%. Griffin will face another challenge in November from Ramon Escapa, who ran unopposed in the Democratic primary. The Illinois Green Party's state convention drew the party faithful to Macomb during the first weekend of March. But the Greens will need to attract a lot more true believers if they hope to make an impact.
Good morning, everybody.
The Greens met in the Sandberg Theater at Western Illinois University. The convention featured activities you might expect, such as policy discussions and the selection of delegates to the party's national convention.
Well, let me explain how we conduct the voting then, and then we'll have people say a little bit about themselves or about someone else if they are so designated.
There
so
were also seminars on how to win office, on sustainable foods, and on renewable energy.
We could go from where we are now to a completely solar and completely wind system, okay, to run all things in 20 years.
One reason the party held a convention is because it failed to earn enough votes in the 2010 election to maintain automatic ballot status in Illinois. Phil Huckleberry says a petition drive was launched during the convention to ensure the Green Party is on ballots in the fall.
We hit kind of a wall after 2010 when we lost established party status. We're hoping that this meeting is really going to rev things back up.
Huckleberry is chair of the Illinois Green Party. While some might relegate the Greens to outsider status, Huckleberry believes a lot more Americans have a lot more in common with the party than they might realize. He calls the Greens the majoritarian party in the U.S.
And what I mean by that is that on issue after issue, we really believe that our position is in line with the majority of the general public, and neither the Republicans nor the Democrats are there.
For example,
we don't want to see handouts to big business. We want to see more participatory democracy. We don't want to see escalation of international conflicts. I mean, right now there's a lot of talk about Iran, and the general public is really not interested in that. But both the Republicans and the Democrats seem hell-bent on doing something more in the Middle East, and we're opposed to that.
While party members feel they share values with many other Americans, the Greens still have a long way to go. No more than 40 people were in the theater at any given time during the convention. Still, the party has won the hearts of some. Fina Campbell is from the small southwest Illinois town of Elsa. She says the Greens care about people and the community.
I used to be a Democrat, and I'm just thoroughly disgusted with both the Republicans and the Democrats. They seem to say one thing and do another, and they're really not for the people.
Campbell feels the only people Democrats and Republicans care about are those who have a lot of money. The convention was held in Macomb because of the work done by the campus Greens during last fall's mock election at Western. The Greens made a strong showing. They generated the type of buzz that has, thus far, escaped the state and national organizations. Stacy Buster is president of Western's Campus Greens.
Having a campus organization that's a third party be one of the largest organizations on campus and be the most involved really drew in a lot of attention. I think it impressed a lot of the Illinois Green Party members.
Buster, who is a sophomore, says she's always been an environmentalist. Like Campbell, she feels the major parties are out of touch with the people.
With the Republicans and Democrats, it's the same thing over and over, and they get more the same every year, and I see how corporations are so irresponsible and negative to both people and the environment. And that's why I thought the Green Party was different, especially since they don't accept corporate funding and their values align with mine.
Buster says one such value is helping people who don't have a voice against corporations that pollute and destroy the land. That might be a majoritarian view, as Phil Huckleberry would say, but it appears the Illinois Green Party still faces an uphill climb. It needs to convince many more people their views align with the party's, and then it has to get them to go green at the ballot box. New ordinances each received unanimous approval from Macomb aldermen on March 5th. The city says the new laws are not designed to prevent large outdoor parties from taking place, but rather to prevent them from getting out of control. One of the ordinances deals with so-called nuisance parties. A gathering could be declared a nuisance based on any one of 13 criteria, including disorderly conduct, loud noise, and destruction of property. Western Illinois University student Grant Roon fears the ordinance will allow police to invade the privacy of those hosting friends.
And as well as it's stifling the social environment of the university, which, as I don't know if any the council knows, is a huge selling point to this university. And without the number of students brought here by the university, the economy of this town would surely suffer.
Fifth Ward Alderman Dave Dorsett agrees Western has developed a reputation as a social school. He's willing to see that change.
I would be almost willing to take a chance on having less of a reputation as a place to come for entertainment and more of a place to come for an education.
The mass gatherings ordinance covers outdoor events in which alcohol is served and more than 150 people are present. A permit must be obtained and bond posted. The ordinance also requires toilets, traffic and parking control plans, and cleanup plans. The site must be fenced. The ordinances were developed in response to last year's out-of-control Wheeler Street block party and students' insistence the party will be held again this year. 7th Ward Alderman Clay Hinderleiter, whose ward includes Wheeler Street, wonders if students would throw the same type of party back home.
If your party was going to happen across the street from your folks' house, what would your folks do? Probably not much different than what we're trying to do.
First Ward Alderman Ryan Hansen says he was initially concerned about the ordinances, but now feels they're a good tool for police. He also says students who are concerned about an invasion of privacy should keep in mind they're still protected by First Amendment rights. Third Ward Alderman Lou Gilbert says he considers it one of his duties to make sure students are safe while they're earning a degree.
And when you do stupid things, we have stupid ordinances to cover them. I really don't like to see this, but you're bringing it on yourselves.
The third ordinance concerns failing to disperse. The fourth gives new powers to the mayor in his role as the city's liquor commissioner. City Attorney Kristen Petrie says the same ordinances are in place in other college towns in Illinois. In fact, Macomb's new rules were based on those laws. Fines are up to $750 per violation. Aldermen say that's the maximum allowed for a non-home rule community. On March 19th, a former Hamilton School Board member was found guilty of sexually abusing a minor. Public Radio's Jason Parrott has the story.
44-year-old August Dion Gregory waived his right to a jury trial. That prompted a stipulated bench trial before Associate Circuit Judge Richard Gambrell at the Hancock County Courthouse in Carthage. The nature of the trial allowed State's Attorney Jim Drotz to present evidence against Gregory without cross-examination or testimony. Gambrell found Gregory guilty of criminal sexual abuse of a minor, a Class 4 felony. He faces up to 3 years in prison, 1 year of parole, and a $25,000 fine. Gregory will also have to register as a sex offender and undergo an evaluation prior to sentencing on May 18th. I'm Jason Parrott.
A Northeast Missouri man will spend the rest of his life in an Iowa prison. 26-year-old Tyler Hobbs of St. Francisville was found guilty of first-degree murder in the 2010 death of 40-year-old Sean Wright of Cahokia. Hobbs arrived for sentencing in the second-floor courtroom of the South Lee County Courthouse on March 23rd, wearing a jail-issued red T-shirt and pants, along with handcuffs and leg irons. He sat facing District Judge Mary Ann Brown as she told him his sentence, life in prison without the possibility of parole. Hobbs' lawyers argued for a new trial prior to sentencing. They said the testimony of the lone witness to the crime was filled with inconsistencies and was incredible in nature. Judge Brown denied the request, citing the physical evidence against Hobbs. Hobbs' sentence also includes the payment of court costs and lawyer fees associated with the case, and he must provide $150,000 to Sean Wright's two children. Former Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich reported to prison on March 15th. The day before, he spoke to reporters outside his home in Chicago.
I am responsible for the things I've said. I accept that decision, as hard as it is. And the law as it stands right now is that I have to go do what I have to go do, and this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do.
The 55-year-old Blagojevich was convicted of corruption. He was sentenced to 14 years in prison. The Burlington Police Department says its preliminary investigation into a deadly shooting last month revealed the victims knew each other. 22-year-old Terrell Miller and 28-year-old Jacqueline Williams were both from Macomb and were in a relationship. Police say they were at a Burlington home when Miller shot Williams in the forehead during an argument. Williams then apparently got the gun away from Miller and shot him in the head several times, killing him. Williams survived her injury. Fort Madison Mayor Steve Ireland died on March 20th. He was 53. Public Radio's Jason Parrott is back with the story.
Ireland had served as mayor since January of 2006. He was just several months into his fourth term when he died at Fort Madison Community Hospital. Ireland served on the Fort Madison City Council before being elected mayor. He was active in the community as a member of various service organizations and government boards and commissions. Ireland even tossed his hat in the ring for higher office, announcing his intention to replace retiring State Senator Gene Frazee. But he withdrew his name from consideration earlier this month, citing work responsibilities and mayoral duties. I'm Jason Parrott.
A building has been chosen in downtown Monmouth to house artist studios and a retail shop to sell their work. The Spurgeon's Building on South Main Street has been part of the cityscape since the 1940s. It housed a JCPenney store for many years and most recently was home to Term City. It has a limestone front, and Susan Toomey says it stood out from all the buildings that were considered.
It's really a great space. I mean, you walk in and you just kind of go, wow, I can see this.
Toomey is director of the Buchanan Center for the Arts. She believes the new art center will complement the BCA rather than compete with it. The first step in the process will be to acquire the building. Toomey says several options are being explored. Macomb Square is in need of some short-term repairs, but aldermen don't want to spend too much because much bigger repairs are forthcoming. Portions of the brick and concrete islands that separate the rings of the square are crumbling. They could pose hazards to pedestrians. The city would like to make some repairs before summer, but alderman at large and Public Works Committee member Dennis Moon says those concerns need to be balanced against the bigger picture for the square.
I think in general the committee agrees that it'd be a total remodel, for lack of a better word, and that starts with the underground work.
That underground work could include installation of a stormwater sewer system. The square does not have one right now. Surface repairs would also be included in the project. It's not known how much the work will cost, though an estimate places the figure at $6 to $8 million. Carthage is preparing for a big birthday bash this summer. Public Radio's Jim Lenz is back with this report filed on March 26th.
The city will celebrate its 175th anniversary during the first week of July. Community Development Director Bob Livingston says organizers are looking for a theme and a symbol.
We've had such things as plates show up from the 125th and the 150th, and there's also some other mementos, and we can't duplicate those things, but we did use them as a guide.
Livingston says the community has responded enthusiastically. More than a dozen volunteer committees have been formed to coordinate events. Livingston says the hard work will be determining the budget and raising money for the celebration. Carthage will also send floats to Warsaw. That city will celebrate its 200th birthday at the end of June. Warsaw will reciprocate by sending floats to Carthage's July 4th parade. I'm Jim Lenz.
The Irish poet and playwright William Butler Yeats said, "Education is not the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire." That pretty well sums up the thinking behind a concept often referred to as progressive education. One of the concept's biggest advocates is Amy Valens. Her final year in the classroom is the subject of the documentary film August to June, which was screened at Western Illinois University last month. Valens' school is in Northern California. Her class was a combination of third and fourth graders. Even though the film was made just a few years ago, computers do not play a major role in the school.
I think there's a very important place for children to understand how to use digital media and how to use computers for research and to make their work, to do various kinds of presentations with their work. But I think that school is a time when kids need to be social, be interacting with each other, be working with actual materials rather than virtual materials a lot of the time, particularly in elementary school. I think that developmentally they need to be kinesthetic learners as well as intellectual learners, so they need to be using their hands and their bodies.
There were no grades given in this class, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
How do you gauge a child's success?
Every day, I was in close contact with every child in that room. I responded to their questions. I asked them questions. I looked at their actual work, and I saw them grow. I had various ways that I kept track of that growth. They were all fairly simple and direct, looking at their work, looking at their earlier work, and judging their progress by how much each one of them was growing and changing. Sometimes you're really clear that a child has an issue that they need to be dealing with. Their reading is not moving along, or you see that they don't understand math concepts. And sometimes you need somebody beyond the classroom teacher. No, I needed somebody beyond myself to give me feedback. So I'm not against using tests to identify things. But the use of tests to assess, particularly high-stakes tests or standardized tests, have limited use for me in the classroom. Much more useful for me was direct contact with students and watching their growth.
Are the tests too general? They're not allowing each child to perhaps progress, learn at their own rate, that you're under this pressure with tests to get everybody up to this certain plateau by a certain time?
There's that. There are so many things that come into this testing piece. One of them is that most of our tests are made to find out who doesn't know rather than who knows. So besides the fact that every child learns at a different rate, the tests themselves are not geared to giving you a real reflection of what you've taught.
What was the greatest challenge to, or what do you consider to be the greatest challenge to teaching in this style?
Maintaining balance. When you're in this role of carefully guiding while you respect a child's natural path, you need to spend a lot of time reflecting. Are you setting up the kinds of experiences that will allow for a balanced education?
As you look back on your career, what's the most rewarding thing about it?
I have lived in the same community for almost 40 years. So children who I had in the early years are now community members with me. And one of the most rewarding things that happens to me is when I'm on a committee and one of my former students is heading the committee and we have a conversation where I can feel where I can respect them as adults and learn from them. That is just such a marvelous feeling.
To have them as peers rather
yes.
than the teacher-student
yes.
relationship.
To recognize that is a lifelong relationship, that the things that you do with a six-year-old stay with them and that relationship is a lifelong relationship if you want it to be.
Educator Amy Valens says there is no such thing as an average child. She says each person is different. Valens thinks the real goal of education should be to engender creative, empathetic, and productive citizens of a democracy. That concludes In the Tri-States. Thanks to Jim Lenz and Jason Parrott for their contributions. For Tri-States Public Radio News, I'm Rich Egger.